Hello, everyone. I'm speaking with Ashiq Siddique, who is a research analyst for the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, working on the federal budget and military spending, and examining how militarized U.S. domestic and foreign policy threatens efforts to address crises like accelerating inequality and climate change. He publishes widely, including lots of excellent reports posted on the National Priorities Project site, and is one of the co-authors of the Poor People's Campaign Moral Budget. Prior to joining the National Priorities Project, Ashiq Siddique was the research lead and founding member of the Climate Mobilization. Welcome to KBOO, Ashiq.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's first talk about the House and Senate vote this week that approved the massive $740 billion Pentagon military budget. Now, Bernie Sanders and Barbara Lee introduced bills in the House and Senate to cut the bloated budget by a very modest 10%, with the money saved slotted to underwrite human and social programs in cities and communities. Now, one would hope that in this moment of cities reexamining their funding of local police departments, that the nation would consider or reconsider the astronomical amount devoted to its global policing of Black and brown people. But it looks like the proposal did not appear to receive any serious attention, or did it? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think it's worth putting this in context of the Pentagon budget just being steadily increased for years with bipartisan support and very few members dissenting. Usually every time this is up for a vote, there might be a few progressives, maybe some libertarians on the Republican side who object, but there's really not much organized opposition, or there hasn't been for the past, like, really two decades. So this year is a meaningful shift in that it came to a vote at all. I think the last time any kind of cut was on the table was 3 or 4 years ago, and the amount proposed to cut was much smaller. And it got way less votes than it did this time. I think something on the order of 70 votes in the House. And it didn't go any further than that. So to get a vote to cut 10% of it, as modest as you said as it is, which it really is a modest cut compared to a $740 billion budget, it's kind of a big deal that it came to a vote in both houses at once, and that it got even as much support as it did, as much as, you know, we're obviously disappointed that it failed. But to get almost 100 votes in the House and a quarter of the Senate is a higher benchmark than we had before, which, you know, it's sad that the bar is so low, because this really just is such a sensible thing. Even before COVID, to redirect this amount of money would have been very sensible. And now in the middle of the biggest economic crisis of our lifetime, you would think this is common sense. So it really shows the disparity between where people in Congress are versus where the American people are, which is, you know, very supportive of something like this, as has been polled.
Yes, and that's why it seems like it's so important what the National Priorities Project is doing in terms of highlighting the trade-offs, because $740 billion just seems so abstract. People can't wrap their heads around it or have no idea about what the federal budget looks like. And really, this 10% cut was only taking the Pentagon's budget back to the Obama years. So it certainly was high to begin with, and it has been increasing, you know, in the 21st century. But tell us about this work of the National Priorities Project to try to provide people concrete ideas about what those trade-offs mean. So with a 10% cut, tell us about the significance of that and what it represents within that larger budget.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give people a picture of what the military budget itself is, people have a very abstract idea of, you know, what that amount of, such an enormous amount of money even does. So usually the excuse given to keep raising it is that we want to support the troops, right? But only about a fifth of that budget goes to directly supporting the troops in terms of pay and benefits. Over half of it goes to military contractors, all these big private companies that sell weapons like Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Raytheon, and they're giving the biggest share of their profits to CEOs who just are directly profiting from war, compared to the lowest-ranked soldier who gets $20,000. In 2018, the CEO of Lockheed Martin took home $20 million, So just a huge chunk of this budget is going to contractors who just directly benefit from escalating wars all over the place, which make the entire world less safe, including Americans. So to cut 10% of it, which would be $74 billion this year, is a really small amount to the military, because there have been studies about how much waste there is in the military budget. One internal study found over $125 billion in administrative waste alone, just because there are all these contracts that aren't properly accounted for. They failed multiple audits in recent years. So just from a fiscal conservative viewpoint, the Pentagon is doing a terrible job at just keeping track of where this money is even going. But if you compare that to any kind of social priorities that are already severely underfunded by the federal government, it's just really illuminating and kind of depressing just to see how much money that could do. So $74 billion, for example, is more than enough to house every one of the homeless people in the country. We could effectively end homelessness with a lot of money to spare. $74 billion is enough to fund enough renewable energy to power almost every household in the country. It's enough to create 1 million jobs in clean energy, which is enough to transition pretty much every worker who currently works in coal, oil, and gas in the fossil fuel sectors. It could increase the number of public elementary school teachers by 50% by hiring 900,000 additional teachers, which is kind of a big deal right now as people are really concerned, justifiably, about how schools are going to reopen in the time of COVID. So smaller classroom sizes could be very helpful in keeping people safely social distanced. If this were given to coronavirus prevention, it would be enough to test every American 6 times over the next year. And that's at a time when we have all these shortages of coronavirus tests. So they're just all these different things. So we laid out 10 trade-offs, but there are so many more that you could think of. And the tool, we have a tool on our website called the Trade-Offs Calculator, where you can put in any amount of money or compare existing amounts of funding for federal programs, and it'll break it down, that amount of money down into different social priorities, how much that could have spent. So you can see how much that this portion of military spending could have bought in terms of green jobs, education, healthcare, child support, all sorts of things that are currently not funded enough.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the tool on the National Priorities Project website, because right now I've got up the cost of the war on terror since 2001, which is also another effective tool, I think, that listeners should know about and share with family, friends, neighbors, comrades, because it in fact, every time I look at it every few months, it's kind of shocking how just the total cost of wars since 2001, now we're up to $5 trillion. And the counter, because you have a lifetime or real-time counter that's quickly moving, you know, that amount is increasing by the second. And one can just click off on the trade-offs. What could these dollars buy? And so even just something like, I mean, what's an example of like a weapon system, or just, you know, some kind of concrete example of an expenditure that could be translated into something else, a more socially useful product?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we put out a study from the National Priorities Project last year, or a report rather, called the Moral Budget with the Poor People's Campaign, which called for $350 billion in cuts from the Pentagon, so almost by half. And we laid out all the things that could cut, starting with low-hanging fruit, like just ending the wars, for example, which would amount to something like $60 to $70 billion as of last year, and that would involve bringing the troops home and closing foreign bases. The U.S. has over 800 foreign military bases outside of U.S. borders. The next country that has the most has only about 20. So we could close 60% of all those bases, and that would be something like $90 billion. So that's even more than the cuts we're talking about this year, $74 billion. And in terms of particular weapon systems, so there are just all these weapon systems and ships and aircrafts that cost billions of dollars. So, for example, Navy destroyers, they're, I think, I'm not sure what the total amount is, but we suggested in our report that we could cut 16 of them, and that would save $8 billion. We could cut aircraft in half and then cancel existing orders for new ones, and that would be $7 billion. We could retire certain systems like the F-22 jet that aren't considered useful anymore. That would be $4 billion. The F-35 is a popular example of just a jet fighter that's extremely expensive and just has not lived up to the potential it was thought to have. And that's estimated as having cost $1.5 trillion over its lifetime, which is more than the entire GDP of Australia. So they're we're talking about enormous numbers over time. Like the F-35 is a plane with over 900 performance deficiencies. Among the problems is like a dangerous night vision defect in the pilot's helmet, which cost $400,000. So yeah, it's just something that is basically it continues to have money funneled into it because the weapons contractors are making money from it. But there are plenty of people within the military who say that it's not necessary or that it's not actually helpful. But it just keeps getting more money because people in Congress are so heavily lobbied by the weapons industry.
And it does seem like any reasonable person just looking at those stats and the trade-offs would come to a much different conclusion. And I think there'd be broad consensus about diverting that vote to socially useful good. This is Laurie Mercier for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm speaking with Ashiq Sadiq, who's a research analyst for the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, and we're talking about the U.S. military budget. Ashiq, even though military spending is at historically high levels, we see no media attention or critique. In fact, I'm just looking today at the mainstream press is now focusing on, I'm quoting here, a darkening U.S. budget, blaming rising deficits on the relief payments to U.S. households, even though this week there's been this discussion of this huge budget for the Pentagon. And, it almost seems surreal that there's no critique of it. Doesn't it also seem like the higher the investment, the more and more the U.S. spends, it's got to justify its expenditures and that we're more likely to move to escalation?
Yeah, that's absolutely right, and it's absolutely incorrect and misleading to say that the deficits are because of the expenditures on social safety. And just to use the deficit as a weapon against any possible social ends, like things that would actually help people and meet human needs, while the military budget keeps being increased every year, while tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations keep going up every year. There are so many answers to how we can pay for the things that actually help people, but those are just always drowned out by these, concern trolling remarks about, needing to be fiscally responsible. Like that logic goes out the window every time the military budget is up for debate. The reality is that with just, tax breaks for the wealthy, like all these loopholes that are baked into the tax code, those amount to like if we had a fair tax code, it would bring in enough revenue that to surpass all of the discretionary budget spending that the federal government has. Like right now, the entire discretionary budget that the government allocates every year from Congress is something like $1.3 trillion, and the amount of tax breaks amounts to more than that. So that's just stuff that's baked into the tax code to give handouts to people who really don't need it, to corporations that do not need it. Meanwhile, the burden of taxes is on the average taxpayer, like workers and just normal people. So there's always money to pay for things, and the military budget is a really good place to start if we want to pay for nice things.
Right, and I really recommend people take a look at the Poor People's Campaign Moral Budget because, in addition to outlining those cuts to the military, the moral budget also outlines ways in which to retrieve fair taxes on the wealthy and corporations, Wall Street, and many more billions that could be raised for putting to addressing climate change, addressing inequalities, all kinds of useful services to people in this country. Not to mention just stopping the harm that this country is doing around the world.
That's right.
So, Ashiq, just in the last minute that we have, where do we go from here? How can we organize to defund the military? I mean, your analysis of the vote this week seems to suggest that, it's not as bleak as we might think. So at this moment when many people are reconsidering budgets, the Black Lives Matter movement just really bringing attention to how municipalities need to reconsider how they devote their budgets by defunding the police and funding more socially useful programs. how can we get people to organize around this notion of defunding the military?
Yeah, I think it's really important to reframe this in terms of what's happening just across the country over the past few months, like with coronavirus, with the uprisings against police violence and structural racism. I think this is a really big change in how people have been talking about federal budgets or local budgets for many years. The Black Lives Matter movement, I think from the beginning, had this paradigm of defunding from state structures that cause harm and reinvesting in programs that actually help people who have been historically oppressed and, you know, ultimately help everybody achieve their potential as people. So I think this is something that is going to keep developing. The next budget is going to be deliberated next year. And there's actually a really big opening next year to just fundamentally transform federal priorities, because something called the Budget Control Act, which was put into place in 2011 in the middle of the last big economic recession that started in 2008, that imposed budget caps on military versus non-military spending and basically put into law that they have to roughly track each other. So that's going to expire next year in 2021. It lasted 10 years. So that's actually a big opportunity for progressives, for people of conscience, to organize, to just really fundamentally transform how disproportionately federal funds go to the military versus anything that actually helps people. So I think, you know, it's, again, it's disappointing, obviously, that this sensible budget cut failed this year. But I think as people keep organizing and making stronger connections across movements, there is a really big opportunity next year and beyond to just, you know, do much more organizing leading up to that. Like, the organizing around this 10% cut came together pretty quickly over just a matter of weeks. So just thinking about how long it can change, it can take to change federal priorities. I think this vote sets a stronger baseline for people to just keep organizing around in ways that will hopefully bear fruit by next year. So I'm cautiously optimistic about this particular issue, just because it seems like more and more it's becoming unavoidable for more people who are, you know, seeing real pain, like in their own lives and in their own communities. And just if we can make stronger connections to how the federal budget is allocated in extremely immoral ways, I think there's a big opportunity to transform things. So it'll take a lot of work, but it starts with, you know, just finding organizations and networks in your own locality that are organizing around this, and just getting people to make stronger connections. Like, the reason that, you know, whatever your particular set of issues is, the reason why that's being ignored by people in government and underfunded has a lot to do with the over-militarization of federal budgets and local budgets.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Ashiq, for coming on the show today. We'll provide links to your work at the National Priorities Project on the Old Mole KBOO website. And you can find the work of Ashiq Siddique, that's Siddique, widely on the web and Twitter. Thanks again.
Thank you so much.